Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 20th, 2018. This is episode 1455. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and then delivers it to your door, ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, my. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. We're here. I'm here. We're all here. We're here to help you get the most out of your technology. Anything with a chip in it. Computer, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still call me. You just have to use Skype or something like that. 888-827-5536. As you're listening, I know you're driving around, you're doing your chores and getting things done. Don't worry, you don't have to make notes. First of all, there will be no quiz. But secondly, even if you hear something, I want to remember that, you don't have to make notes because we do it for you. I hired this guy, great guy, James DeRuvo. Hi, James. He's writing it all down right now. He's putting it on the website, techguylabs.com. So I'm the tech guy, and the place that my laboratory is online at techguylabs.com. And it's free. There's no sign up or anything. You just go there. There's a search. But you can also go to the individual shows. This is episode 1455. So each page of the website is devoted to a show. Each show is then divided into hour. Each hour divided into calls and segments. And it's all there, in other words. In fact, one of the things I'm going to have James put there right away is a really great article from a guy named Brian Krebs, who is a fantastic security guy. He used to work at the Washington Post, then went out on his own and has a blog called Krebs on Security, which for, I think, you know, a lot of people is probably more, you know, technical than they need it to be. Because, security is a technical subject. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we all kind of have to be security experts. That's what's happened, isn't it? I mean, in the early days of computing, you know, you had a PC and maybe you had a dial-up modem and that was about it. And you connected the internet over your phone line. Now you have used to have to have an office to have. You know, you have a high-speed internet with a router going into your home, dividing internet access up into not only just computers, you know, laptops and desktops, but now phones and a bunch of devices. I have almost 60 devices connected to the internet in my house. Amazon Echoes, ovens, robotic vacuum cleaners, doorbells, cameras, everything. Those things are called the Internet of Things devices. Those are things that are connected to the internet. Really, what this is the revolution we all knew would happen, which is that computing would go from being just in the centralized this is the history of computing. Started in a room, right? It was the size of a room. You couldn't have access to it unless you had special permissions, and they had a priesthood that was running it, and then it got smaller. And then you got, this was a big deal in the late 70s, early 80s, a personal computer on your desktop. Then you started carrying one around in your briefcase. Then we all started carrying one around in our pockets. And now these processors are so inexpensive, they're in everything. They're all over the place. That's it's basically a good thing. The issue, though, is that they're connected to the internet. And some of them are more secure than others, Which brings me back to Brian Krebs. He's written on his blog, Krebs on Security. He posted this a couple of days ago. Basic rules for securing your IoT stuff. Now, this is a less technical story from him, one that everybody should read. Of course, he says at the end, I realize the people who probably need to be reading these tips the most likely won't ever know they need to care enough to act on them. In other words, civilians, normies, normal people, not geeks, are obliviously just installing all this stuff and saying, yeah, well, look at that. It just goes right on the internet, and then I can control it with my phone. This weekend put in a thing from Beautyrest that goes under my mattress and monitors my sleep and my wife's sleep and our heart rate and our respiration, and then connects to the internet. We're putting more and more of those things on. You know, I have how many devices with cameras do you have in your house? Of course, there's a computer, the laptop. If you have some of these Amazon Echoes have cameras. Your TV may have a camera, more and more, and microphones. Those are all Internet of Things devices, and we can't really install them obliviously. Is that a word, obliviously? It's a good word if it is. You know, we can't just put them in there blithely and say, whoa, yeah, look at all the cool stuff. I've got a robotic vacuum cleaner. Without really kind of thinking about security. I'm sorry. I know you don't want to be a security expert. You didn't sign up for this, but you kind of have to. So, number one in Brian Krebs' rules, avoid connecting your devices directly to the internet. Now, that's probably one that everybody's doing anyway. You're going through a router because nobody, you know, the way the internet works in general is your internet service provider provides you with a single internet address, public internet address, and that's enough for one device unless you use a router. That's that thing you're connecting to the wall. Maybe it has Wi-Fi in it too. And it spreads the internet out to a bunch of other devices. You need it, but it also has a security benefit. It's essentially a firewall. So that's what Brian's saying is have a firewall between you and those Internet of Things devices. And in most cases, you do. Some people who are pretty technical who are listening may be poking holes in their firewall, open what we call opening ports, to give some Internet of Things devices direct access to the outside world. Don't. So when people say, I want to run my own web server, that's what that is. It's putting a computer in your house, putting it on the internet without, you know, anything protecting it. And the problem with that is, your computer's also inside your house, so it becomes a pathway for bad guys to get into your network. This is what we're trying to prevent. This is the whole thing we're trying to prevent. It's not so much that we're worried about somebody turning on a camera and watching you, although that is a threat. But we're also worried about a bad guy using a poorly configured or a badly designed internet-connected device in your house as a gateway into your network. And once there, there's lots of things they can try to do. Put malware on your machines, download stuff from your computer, you know, get your tax returns, your social. There's all sorts of things they try to do. Put ransomware on there. So we kind of want to make our internal network private. Not just for privacy, private for security. There's really two goals here. So keep that firewall up. Keep your router going, and don't put your stuff out on the internet. Sometimes I think you get, like the Magic Jack or some of these phone systems, the UMA, and they say, you know, it'd be really best if you put it right on the internet. Don't. Because then it's unprotected. It's a target. Right now, if you've properly set up your system, and most people just do this automatically, the router, the Wi-Fi access point, is the target. That's the thing visible to the internet. Now, you want to make sure that's secure. And so that leads to rule number two. Anything that is on the internet, whether it's inside your house or visible outside the house, you want to change the password on it. The very first thing you want to do is change the default password on your router. All devices come with a built-in password, admin or something like that. The default password. And that's so that when you get the device, you can set it up. But the very first thing you do when you set up a new router, I bet you most of you don't do this, most people don't, or a camera or anything connected to the internet, is change the password to something. You can use a single house password that you use for everything. Then update the firmware. Make sure there's you got the latest stuff on there. That'll presumably fix any holes. I can go on, but I'm going to give you a link right in the show notes to this article. It's good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ask a geek. And geeks, because I know most of you listening are geeks, read the article and then tell your family and friends. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Pat in San Diego, you're first. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I can't believe I got in.
Well, yay! Congratulations.
Thank you. I don't know if you can help me or not, but you're my last hope.
Okay.
I've had email... I have iCloud, and I don't know how I got that, but when I started out, I was a novice. So I have iCloud. I don't use it much. And then I have Gmail. And every morning I get up, and I go through my email. I delete what I don't like, and then I go to the trash, and I delete all my trash, and then I flag it. And I've been doing this for 5 years. On the 7th of December, I got up, and all my emails from 5 years ago are gone. Letters, notifications, appointments, everything, photographs just vanished. I know I didn't delete it because I'm super careful, and you have to take several steps to get it off, important, starred, all of that. And I've called several people.
Who do you use for your email provider?
Who's
your internet service provider? Where do you get your email? AOL?
Gmail.
Google. Okay, good.
Google, yeah.
Okay, hold on. I got to ask you some questions.
Okay.
And then how do you get your email? You do it through the web, or do you do it through a email program?
Through the web.
So you're just using your browser to look at your Gmail?
Yeah, I actually just use an iPad.
Okay. And when you go to your Gmail, right now you're saying, I'm going to the important folder and nothing's there?
Well, when I go to my Gmail, I usually go to all mail first.
Good. Oh, you know about all mail. Okay, that's the first thing to look at.
Yeah.
All mail is everything.
Yeah, and then I'll delete what I don't like, and then that goes to trash, and then I'll pop over to trash and get rid of that, and then I'll flag my all mail, and usually that goes also in the important file.
I think, first of all, stop emptying the trash.
Really?
Yeah, that's not necessary. So there's two places that email in Gmail can go when you're done with it. One... And frankly, I wouldn't even – Gmail was designed to never delete mail, but I understand.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was when 11 years ago.
Because I thought, you know, if I save too much mail, then I might crash my iPad, which I've done before.
Yeah, don't worry about your iPad. It's not on your iPad. It's only on Google's servers. They cache it a little bit on the iPad, but not much.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about that at all. So there's two places it goes. There's an archive – and then there's trash. The trash gets emptied automatically every 30 days. You don't need to empty your trash. And again, none of this is on your server or your computer, rather. It's all on Gmail. It's all on Google's servers, so you don't have to worry about that either. So I would look in archive, and I would even
I've looked in archive.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Sam, I'm afraid that what might have happened is by your aggressively emptying trash, you accidentally emptied more than you thought.
Really? And is there not a Google iCloud?
That is the cloud. You're in the cloud, and you deleted it from the cloud, in effect. There's a conceptual issue here, which is, and I understand why, in the old days of email, you stored it on your computer. That's not how Gmail works. It is in the cloud. It isn't on your computer. And your iPad is basically a window into what's on the cloud. So when you delete something, you're deleting it from their version of iCloud, the Google cloud.
So basically it's my fault.
Well, I don't know if it's your fault because I can't see what you did.
Yeah.
Google's pretty good about not deleting stuff. I've never seen them delete stuff without your permission. You looked in all mail. It's not there.
Yeah, I've looked everywhere.
And you looked in.
Yeah, I've been very aggressive with this. But, you know, I did try to call Google and spoke to somebody in the Philippines, and nobody's ever heard of my problem, and they directed me to Google Cloud. But when I called Google Cloud, they want a PIN number.
No, there's no help for you here.
Yeah.
There's no help. It's a free service, and help is very, very limited.
Yeah, I thought everything was stored on the cloud forever, you know.
Only if you don't delete it.
Okay.
So from now...
No, I've been doing this for 5 years, so why would it just happen now?
Well, I don't know. It's possible, for instance, if you accidentally hit Command A and then deleted, that everything got deleted. You see, it's not... So stop. First of all, stop deleting stuff. Let it delete. If you don't want it, put it in the trash. You've got 30 days from the point you put it in the trash.
Well, I learned something, but I lost everything.
Yeah, the other thing I would do, maybe you didn't. Now, I'm not blaming you. So stop. I apologize if you feel like you're being blamed. I'm not blaming you, but I don't know what else could have happened. It's not likely Google did it. On the other hand, maybe a good time to change your password on your email.
Yeah, you know, I get my junk mail too, and a couple of times I've had, you know, somebody's your password has been changed or something like that. But I never.
Change it now, just to be safe. This is a good time to change it. It's important that you understand it's not stored on the iPad. You don't need to delete mail. Let it manage it. The whole idea of Gmail you have is a lot of storage. And that, I mean, I have 13 years of mail on Gmail since it started. You can go back, and that's kind of the idea, be an archive for you with Google's powerful searching attached to it. But, I'm not sure. The thing is, I don't know what happened. I think it's unlikely, because I've never heard of this happening, that Google somehow accidentally deleted everything. So it's much more likely that either you or a malefactor, possibly a malefactor, deleted it. That's why I want you to change your password. We're going to take a little break. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. We'll take a look at home theater and lots more of your calls. One of the reasons you use Gmail is because in the old days, you put all your mail on your computer, right? And it would occupy space, and you'd delete it, and you'd have to manage it. And the theory with Gmail is you don't have to manage it at all. Web-based mail, you don't have to manage it at all. So don't worry about it. If it's spam, you really don't want it. Put it in the trash can. 30 days from now, it'll be deleted. Otherwise, archive it if you want it out of your inbox. All mail is something most people don't look at because it's everything. But you did the right thing, which is looking at all mail to see if there's anything else left. It sounds like it was all deleted. What we don't know is why. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson's here. He's the home theater guru from avsforum.com. And you've had time now to recover from the Consumer Electronics Show.
I sure have.
Now, before the show, you said you'd learned something about a new technology that's very exciting. And then, of course, after the show last week, we talked about it. Micro LED. Only Samsung has it so far. Although I didn't realize this, but after a little research, I found that Apple bought a company about 4 years ago that makes micro LEDs. And so the question is, will Apple be doing something like this? The rumor was maybe starting with the watch. But see, the watch is exactly the wrong thing, because as I understand it, the size of these micro LEDs is big. The pixels are big.
Well, compared to what you need in a watch, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you wouldn't get any resolution in a wristwatch.
You would. The
TV that Samsung showed that was a 4K TV was 146 inches.
Right. With a pixel size of a little less than 1 millimeter.
Yeah. So now that you've had time to get out of the reality distortion field that is CES, and that's putting it kindly, what do you think?
Oh, I think this technology is astonishing. It's going to be great.
They just have to get it smaller.
They have to get it a little smaller. That's right. And people have been talking about that.
They have to cut it at least in half if they're going to make – if they cut it in half, wouldn't they still have a 75-inch TV for 4K?
Correct. But yes, correct. And 75, interestingly enough, I've been talking with my colleagues this week – and we're all saying 75 is the new 65.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
You know, a lot of people are bringing out 75-inch TVs. And, in fact, the manufacturers are starting to offer us reviewers, hey, wouldn't you like to look at a 75-inch?
Now, Mike Heiss in the chat room is saying that Sony has something called Crystal LED That is essentially micro LED. The idea is here you have direct view LEDs. Instead of LEDs being the backlit for your LCD, which is a shutter technology, you have a you actually have direct view red, green, and blue little teeny weeny 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 LEDs.
Yep.
Sony's been doing this for a couple of years.
Well, they showed it as a prototype like maybe 5 years ago. But then they haven't showed it since.
Got it.
Now, they did show, last year, they showed a massive micro LED display that they called Cletus. Everybody makes that joke. It stands for C-L-E-D. Crystal LED Integrated System. And it's like the Samsung one in that it's made of tiles, these normal reasonably sized tiles that have a bunch of little micro LEDs in them, and you just assemble them together in a screen of whatever size you want. That was intended more for what's called industrial visualization. So a big company buys one of these things, installs it in their boardroom, and the executives can look at a car full size and say, oh, let's see what it looks like in midnight blue, and let's see what it looks like in, you know, other colors, and let's see what this part will do if we do this or that. So it's meant for what's called industrial visualization. It wasn't intended for home theater. Samsung's The Wall, as they call it, is intended for home theater. And it's the first generation. And these micro LEDs are a little less than 1 millimeter big, and they're separated by about a millimeter of space. And if you're sitting back at a normal distance, you won't see them. It'll look perfectly smooth. Some people complained or thought they saw the seams between the tiles, right? Because you build it. Basically, when you install one, they bring in a stack of these tiles, and they put them on your wall, and they stitch them together, and it all acts like one big screen. And some people – and I did see the seams between the tiles once or twice under very specific conditions. But generally speaking, I didn't. And I was maybe 6 to 10 feet away. So, you know, I don't think that's a problem. The problem is, as you noted, getting the size down where it's more appropriate for more homes. And Samsung, in fact, was talking about maybe being able to do a 75-inch version. But what that requires is that the LEDs, the little pixels, become even smaller.
Now, to be fair, what we know about technology is stuff becomes smaller fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Fast.
However, I will say this. The process of manufacturing micro LED tiles is very, very tricky.
Oh, of course.
There's one technique called pick and place, where a robot arm comes over and actually picks up tiny little LEDs and places them in the tile. And even at 1 millimeter, that's fiendishly difficult to be that precise. And to get smaller and smaller still is going to be even more difficult. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It is going to happen. As you point out, you know, technology, things always get smaller and better and cheaper.
I mean, you know, if 20 years ago you would have said, did you know that we'll have chips with 10 nanometer processes?
Yes.
Nobody would have believed
it. People would have said, no way.
Really, the story of Silicon Valley could almost be said to be the story of shrinkage, making stuff smaller. So we know it'll happen. Fascinating.
We do.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I talked with one of the companies I talked with at CES. I just wrote a story about it on AVS Forum, was Nanosys, which they are one of the primary companies that deal with quantum dots. Now, quantum dots are nanotechnology, truly microscopic spheres of semiconductor material on the nanometer scale.
But are they used in an LCD system, or they?
They are. They are.
They're really still backlights.
They are still backlights. But the guy at Nanosys was telling me that they are looking at the application of applying quantum dots to micro LEDs, and that may help get them smaller and smaller, while making them also brighter and brighter. So this is a few years down the line. We were looking at some pretty futuristic stuff.
You know what I find fascinating? This really, it's really interesting because what you're seeing, if there's a great book by a guy named George Gilder, which was written almost 20 years ago now, called Microcosm, which talks about the singular amazing thing. And normally, you know, making stuff smaller makes it more difficult, more expensive, like a watch. Mm-hmm. But it turns out in the digital sphere, there are all these benefits to getting things smaller, lower power, lower heat, more efficiency. And it, and technology has become very, very good. That's why hard drive densities have gone up. That's why memory has gone up. That's why your processors have gotten so fast they could put millions of transistors in. In fact, they're getting to billions of transistors in the same size chip. So this is going to happen. I have no doubt. And this may be this actually may end up being if you say it's a better technology, a huge revolution. In televisions and how they work.
It really is. It really is. And this Samsung product is really only the first step for the home use.
It's not going to be in the home in any practical way this year. In fact, I'd almost say don't get it until they need to perfect this, right?
Well, I mean, it looked pretty darn good to me.
Oh, no, I know it looks good, but it's 146 inches.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be super expensive. It's for very early adopters who have a lot of extra money.
It may be the case that in 5 years we're all watching micro LED TVs and computers and watches and everything else in between.
Yep. The quantum dot micro LED is going to be great for VR goggles.
It's fascinating.
Headsets, because it's going to be able to make super
high
resolution.
Scott Wilkinson, I got to cut you off. AVSforum.com. Thank you for joining us. Let's keep talking about home theater. It's exciting. It's exciting. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It is all yours, my friend.
Thank you so very much. So let's see. UJ asks, I wonder with the introduction of micro LED that it will obsolete emissive quantum dots before they come to market. That's a very good question. I tend to think not because emissive quantum dots can in fact be used. Well, yeah, there's two ways to use quantum dots in an emissive capacity. One is to actually, as I mentioned during the segment, coat some of the micro LEDs, just use blue micro LEDs and coat some of them with red or green quantum dots. Quantum dots are so small, so much smaller than micro LEDs probably will ever get, that they could be used in conjunction with blue micro LEDs and create full spectrum displays that way. One thing Nanosys told me was that red, green, and blue LEDs, including micro LEDs, have different profiles. They have different voltage requirements. They have different degradation profiles. So if all you had was blue LEDs, some of them coated with these red and green quantum dots, then you wouldn't have those problems. And then there are true electro-emissive quantum dots. And I saw a demo of that this year too, where instead of the quantum dots being stimulated to emit light, red or green, by absorbing blue light. Instead, they are stimulated to emit light when stimulated by electrical voltage. And I think those are sort of two different things. And I bet you they'll develop in parallel. Which one will ultimately win out will probably be a cost factor. And if that were the case, I'd probably bet on emissive quantum dots more than micro LED, because emissive quantum dots can probably be made cheaper ultimately than micro LED. But it's a very good question. Titus, micro LED was reverse engineered from crashed alien spaceships held in Area 51. Yeah, I suppose. That's possible. Nah. User 6837, do you recommend 120 or 240 refresh rate for a 55-inch TV? Well, the size doesn't really matter. 120 or 240, those are most important if you're planning to use frame interpolation. And what that means, as I've explained before, is that the TV, basically you have frames coming in from the video signal. And there's motion in the from one frame to the next, something has moved. And so if you don't, if you just display that as it is, the motion is blurry. So what TVs often do is they synthesize, they create new frames, and they stick them between the actual frames. And they calculate where the moving object would be if those frames were real. And so that sharpens up motion blur. However, it also introduces an artifact called the soap opera effect. And it's called that because it makes movies in particular, 24 frame per second movies, look like they were shot on video. They look like soap operas. And a lot of people don't like that. And so they turn it off. The other thing that's important, the other way to solve motion blur is to do what's called black frame insertion, or backlight scanning is another term for it. Basically, what you do is if you insert
Scott,
a black
Scott, frame. You're not paying attention to the time.
Oh, I'm not paying attention. Here we go.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Mike, Niagara Falls, Ontario, the Canada side. Hi, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Leo, hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, man. I've been listening to your podcast for like 10 years, and I've never called in until now.
Hey, are you excited? I know I am.
It's awesome.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I'm just wondering if it's safe to use a program like D-Band to wipe a solid-state hybrid drive.
Oh, that's an interesting question. That's actually a great question. So D-Band, Derek's Bootenuke, it really comes from the spinning drive era when you could write. Basically, in the old days, the traditional hard drives, they wrote sequentially. So you write to the sector, then the next sector, the next sector, the next sector. And D-Band works that way. It would write one to a sector, then erase it, then a zero to a sector any number of times. You specify the number of times. Theory being, no one's going to ever be able to read this hard drive. You've completely erased it. Solid-state drives don't work the same way because they need to do something called wear leveling. When the cells on a solid-state hard drive get written to too many times, they wear out. So in order to make a solid-state hard drive be as reliable as a spinning drive, and by the way, I want to be clear up front, they are, they had to change how they wrote to them. So they do two things. They over-provision the drive. They give it actually more memory than they, you know, a gigabyte drive might have 1.2 gigabytes. They give it more storage than advertised, and they write to the cells in a random way, doing something called wear leveling. They're trying to level out the amount of wear any given cell gets. But that means it's a little more difficult to fully erase a solid-state drive. And in fact, security experts warn that you can't fully erase a solid-state drive. In other words, it's safe to run D-Band against it, but it may not do what you think it's going to do. You can't get all the little bits of information. They're strewn all over the drive in a way that isn't rewritable. So if you, even a hybrid drive, you're talking about a hybrid drive, which is a popular technology nowadays where they mix solid state with spinning drives. Even a hybrid drive has some solid state. There's the potential for some data leakage, even with something like D-Band running against it. So our advice really, and this is going to be the way most computers will work going forward because they have enough power to do this, is to, before you put anything on a drive, encrypt it. Use the built-in encryption in Windows called BitLocker, in Apple's Mac OS called File Vault. And if you do it from the day one, then even though some data will still be there, it'll be nonsense data. It won't be useful unless you have the decryption key. So that doesn't mean don't use D-Band because it's going to get rid of most of it, but don't assume that D-Band is 100% successful, I guess is the bottom line on that one. Great question. I hope that that makes sense because it's a fairly important concept, something we kind of need to know about that's very different. This is kind of what's happened in computing. Our paradigm, the way we understand how computing works, has drastically changed, and companies really haven't, they don't want to confuse anybody. So they pretend that a solid-state drive roughly works the same as a spinning drive. It ain't true. And even on your phone, by the way, which uses solid state memory exclusively, it's impossible to fully erase it. So, but that's why almost all phones now have encryption by default. Antonio Chico, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Antonio.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call. Basically, I signed up for Norton at a business account, and they give you the free Norton.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I've heard really good things, and I've heard really bad things about
Norton. Hey, Norton! I always want to, I think of Jackie Gleason. Hey, Norton! So Norton is not one of my favorites.
Okay. Norton, I was in your chat room, and they said maybe like WebRoot.
No. They're all terrible. So here's the deal. It is the case in business you probably want to use an antivirus. That's different because the business antiviruses work completely different than the consumer antiviruses. You remember last couple of weeks we've had all this hoo-ha about Meltdown and Spectre, these chip flaws.
Yes.
And the patches and so forth. One thing that Microsoft found is they couldn't patch Windows machines that were running antiviruses because the antiviruses caused blue screens of death if they fixed it. So all the antivirus companies had to go out and fix their antivirus before you could get patched. There are many people who will never get patched because they are using unpatched antiviruses. In fact, all you have to do is look at the news over the last couple of years to see Norton's one of them. Antivirus allows bad guy into system. Any program you run potentially will put a security hole in your system. That makes sense, right? Because programs aren't perfect. Any program
exactly.
you run will put a security hole in your system, even, in fact, especially a security program, because security programs have to operate at a very low level. And so they, in a way, are an even better conduit. And the bad guys know this, and they try to figure out, let's find some flaws in Norton, because it's going to give us a gateway into the system. The reason I used to recommend antiviruses, most experts I know, and I include myself here, we no longer recommend antiviruses for consumers. This is not for business. That's a different matter. But and most antiviruses for business work very differently. You know, they block stuff from coming into the network, things like that. So that Norton at your work, that's fine. But it's not the same thing you're going to get at home at all. And the thing you're going to get at home is probably not needed. First of all, Windows 8 and Windows 10 now come with an antivirus. Microsoft puts an antivirus on there. Windows Defender, they call it on Windows 10. It's not perfect. This is my other problem with antiviruses. I have numbers of problems. The other one is an antivirus gives you a false sense of security. I'll give you an example, the WannaCry malware. You notice it broke through a lot of systems, many systems with antiviruses, even business systems. Only about a third of the antiviruses detected WannaCry. But that means two-thirds of the systems protected by antiviruses were wide open. And the problem I have is the people who ran those antiviruses thought, well, we're safe. We got a Norton on here. What could possibly go wrong? So it's a false sense of security you get. So there's two problems. One, antiviruses cause security problems, add to it. Two, they give you a false sense of security. The final problem is just from my own experience, people call with problems all the time. I can't get on the internet or something's not working. My email, I can't attach an email. And it almost always boils down to an over-aggressive security program. Simple antivirus is not so bad, where it's not trying to protect you like crazy. It's just scanning. That's what Microsoft's Defender does. It's kind of dumb. It's a simple antivirus. Anything called a security suite, stay away from, because it's really going to cause more problems. It's going to give you, you know, all sorts of compatibility issues. It may even block patches like these Spectre Meltdown patches. And that ultimately makes you less secure, not more secure. So my advice, if you're running Windows 8 or Windows 10, is don't do anything. If you're running earlier versions of Windows, you can get Microsoft's antivirus. They used to call it Security Essentials. You go to Microsoft.com/security_essentials. You can install it. It's free. That's all you need. The real secret to security is, I'm sorry to say, people want a magic bullet. Really, the secret to security is you. You got to keep your system up to date. You have to make sure you don't accept candy from strangers. In other words, files that somebody offers you or suggests to you. Be very careful about every program. This is a really important thing to understand. Every program you install on your system, and I understand you have to install programs or nothing's going to work, but every single thing you put on your system has the potential to open a hole in your system. So be very judicious about where you get your software, what software you install. Don't click links in email. Don't open email attachments. Don't click links in messenger programs or on social networks like Twitter and Facebook. Bad guys are trying like crazy to get into your system. And the best protection is you just being careful. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you called and I'm glad you asked the question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls to come. 8888 Ask Leo right after this. All right, Scotty. I'll put the clock here.
I'll watch the clock this time.
Don't forget, it's here for your...
I shall.
All right, have fun.
Thank you. I got a great question here that I wanted to address. I think it was from Tim Elliott. Was that the one? I think so. Can they combine the best aspects of OLED and micro LED? They're both emissive technologies, interestingly enough. The answer is not really. Micro LED and OLED are fundamentally different technologies, and so I don't see any way to combine them. However, they can combine OLED with quantum dots. And here's how that would work. OLED, at least as it exists today, in consumer TVs, not professional monitors, but consumer TVs, the OLED material that actually emits light is basically a combination of blue OLED and yellow OLED. What does that make when you combine them together? White. And the OLED TVs, the OLED within the OLED TVs produces white light. That passes through a red, green, and blue color filters in the subpixels, and that creates the color image. Now, if they were to replace the color filters, the red and green and blue color filters, with quantum dots, then they could just use, I think it would be, then they would, actually it would be a little different than that. It would be they would use blue OLED, and that leads to another problem that I'll get to in a minute. But if they just use blue OLED and fired it onto these what used to be color filters, or they're now little tiny pieces of quantum dot material. One little piece would glow green, one would glow red, and the other one would be clear and allow the blue light to pass through. This is called color filter replacement. And they are working on that. And it could be used with LCD displays with a backlight, with blue LED backlight. It could be used with OLEDs with a blue OLED that basically passes, that stimulates these quantum dots to glow red and green and passes the blue straight through. That could, in fact, increase the brightness, at least of red and green, making OLEDs brighter. Now, there's a couple problems with that I can foresee. One is blue OLED material has the reputation, and I believe it's still true, of degrading faster than red or green or yellow OLED material. So it tends not to last as long. Then there's the issue of if you're going to make a clear subpixel that lets the blue light pass through, it's not going to be as bright as the red and green quantum dot, the little subpixels that are being stimulated by the blue light. So those are a couple of problems that I don't know how they're addressing. But they are talking about color filter replacement with quantum dots in an OLED TV. I suppose you could also do that with micro LED. You can certainly combine quantum dots with micro LED in terms of, as I said earlier, coating some of those blue micro LEDs with red or green quantum dots. And thus they would glow red or green, and then the blues would glow blue, and you'd have a nice bright image. So that was the question. That was that question. Twisted Mister was asking earlier about 120 hertz and 240 hertz, and frame interpolation and black frame insertion. And I ran out of time because I got so excited about it. I forgot to look at the clock. Now I'm looking at the clock and I still have 265 seconds. So, and Twisted Mister posted after that, the original purpose for 120 hertz was that it was an even multiple of both 24 and 30, eliminating the need for 3-2 pull down. And that is true. And so if you don't do frame interpolation, which many people don't like because of the soap opera effect, you can do black frame insertion. You can do what's called 5-5 pull down, which is basically if you're at 24 frames per second, show each frame five times. This is a variation of what they do in movie theaters. At 24 frames per second, if you just showed each frame once, it would look jerky. And so they do something called double flash and triple flash. And what that is they show the frame, but they show it two or three times. There's a mechanic, well, in digital cinemas, it's not mechanical. In a film projector, it was a mechanical shutter that actually interrupted the frame two or three times. And that actually smooths out motion. And that's what happens also with 120 hertz panels. And 240 hertz just doubles that. So I do recommend getting an LCD TV that has at least 120 hertz native refresh rate. Now, here's a very important distinction. There's the native rate at which the panel can refresh or repeat display frames. There's also what's called effective motion rate, which is what a lot of manufacturers use. And this is pretty confusing. And I think they're trying to confuse the issue. They say, oh, we've got an effective motion rate of 120 or 240 or 480 or 960. And what they're doing is that they are taking into account frame interpolation and black frame insertion or backlight scanning to give you what it supposedly is equivalent to. And I say, okay, that's fine and dandy, but you really want to know what the native refresh rate of the panel is. And that may be a little harder to discover. I try to discover that on all my reviews and on anything I write about, because that's the important thing. If a TV says it has 120 hertz effective motion rate, that probably means that the actual native refresh rate is only 60 hertz. And I would say in that case, step up to a native refresh rate of 120 hertz, which means they'll probably tout an effective motion rate of 240 or higher. So I know that's a little confusing, but it is what it is. Thanks to all of you for your well wishes about my health. I did catch the CES flu. Despite my best efforts, I was really, really careful. And I have to give kudos to this medication called Tamiflu, which I actually got a prescription of and got it before I left for CES. If you take it within the first day or two of symptoms, knocks it out really well. I was impressed, very impressed. So I thank you for that. I'm feeling a lot better. Thanks in part to Tamiflu. And Mrs. Scott is doing fine. Thank you very much. And let's see, anything else? There are videos, Friendly Manitoba. Go to avsforum.com /tag/CES. And you'll see all our CES reports. And some of them have a triangle with a circle. And that indicates, you know, like a play button. That indicates that there's a video associated with that post. And you can go in and see all the videos. Mark Henninger, the senior editor at AVS Forum, did a great job shooting a bunch of videos. And so go check them out.
Thank you, Scott. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thanks, Leo.
Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality. Things that talk to you, things you talk to, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. It's pretty clear this 2018 is going to be the year of the personal assistant. I guess that's what they're calling them now, where, you know, the Amazon Echo, you know, where you talk to it and it does stuff. Not much. It's not that smart. The Google Assistant. Microsoft, you might not know. Microsoft has one too. Cortana, they call her.
There's also, of course, Apple's Siri, which, believe it or not, started it. In fact, Siri wasn't even an Apple product. It was a third-party product. A company created an app called Siri that could make reservations, do all sorts of things talking to Siri. Apple bought it, actually stripped it down, dumbed it down a little bit, and has only slowly been adding back into it. But it's pretty clear now that at least in certain circumstances, having a voice assistant is useful. In the car, for instance. And actually, I really should give credit to Ford, I think, and other car companies. But I think Ford was the first to have voice assistants, maybe Mercedes, where you would talk to the car and say, dial a number, that kind of thing. And it slowly got built from there. So it's probably in car was the first place. But now we found in our home it's kind of useful. And home automation in particular has benefited from this. For as long as I've been going to CES, and even before that, Comdex, people have been talking about, home automation. You're going to be able to say, well, actually, nobody thought of say. You'll be able to take your Crestron remote control, push a button, and the lights will dim. The movie screen will come down. The popcorn will start popping. The film will start playing. And in fact, if you were rich enough and maybe a movie star, you might have even had a screening room, something like that. A lot of movie stars did. That's home automation. But of course, it turns out that picking up a device and pressing buttons to get it to do that is not the most natural or ideal way to do it. It's even better if you can talk to it. And this is where Amazon's done so well, the Amazon Echo. You talk to it and you say, Echo, dim the lights. Or you can even say, let's watch a movie, Echo. And if you've set it up, and this is the rub. You have to set it up, which is a pain. But if you set it up, you can get it to do all sorts of things like that. This is the year. So if it's the year of the personal assistant, of the voice assistant, I think it means it might also be the year of home automation. So I'll add those two things to the litany of things we cover. Anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, techguylabs.com. Art's next in Los Angeles. Hi, Art.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. So we got Fios internet at home, and we recently upgraded from 75 up and down to 150 up and down.
How do you like it?
Well, I don't. They stopped the install because from the ONT, the optical network terminal, to the router, they're saying that I have to have Cat 5 or Cat 6.
Yeah.
And I can't use the existing coax.
Oh.
A buddy of mine has it 150 up and down with coax, and it's working just fine. It's on. I've learned a lot about this recently because I read up trying to figure this out. It's on GPON as opposed to BPON. Can you shed any light on this for me?
Yeah, so the issue, and it's really just the company. You just have to convince the company. They can do it. Of course they can do it. So, but they may not do it. Their switches may, they want to put an Ethernet switch in there, not some sort of MoCA or other technology in there to connect to a coax. It's all the same in some ways. I mean, it's a cable that transmits signals, right?
Right.
The problem is, you don't have fiber in the home. You only have fiber to either the curb or maybe to the outside wall of the house. At some point, you need to convert it into something that you can use.
Right.
And for most people, that's Ethernet. That's those Ethernet cables, which then come in from the wall and then plug into a router. Because routers, you don't have a coax router. You have an Ethernet router, right? So it plugs into the router. And then you've got it throughout the house. They would have to give you some special equipment that could do it with coax.
Oh, so it's a dollars and cents issue. They don't.
Well,
do
it's
it.
Just what they do. I mean, they just decided not to support it, and that's it's kind of. There's no reason they can't. It's just not as common. It may cost more. I don't really know. I mean, really, you could also have the same. Well, why don't they just bring fiber right into the house and have a fiber router? That would even be better, but they don't. The answer is they don't do it.
Yeah.
They could.
Okay, so They're telling me I can do 100 up and down on coax or mocha, so I guess that's what I'm going to have to do.
100, you know, let me tell you the truth. I have two internet connections in the house. I have a consumer cable network, which goes to 210 megabits, and I have a business connection, which stops at about 100. And the business one's much more reliable, much more consistent.
Really?
The only reason you want more bandwidth is if you have more devices. Nothing you're doing, watching Netflix, at best 50.
And therein lies my problem. I got a bunch of adult kids. I can't.
Oh, those damn adult kids. They ruin it every time. Yeah, they're all wanting to watch Netflix, right?
They're each on four devices simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you need more. You're right. I don't even know if 150 will be enough. So that's where you really get into trouble. It's not so much the speed. You know, if at 100 megabits, you're as fast as you'd ever need to be. But if you had 50 people using it, it wouldn't be fast enough.
Got it. Hey, Leo, I appreciate the information.
Yeah. Now you understand. It's just them. One thing you could go to them and say, look, I'm willing to buy the box. Why don't you? I'm willing to buy a 150 megabit Mocha box. Or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is. Whatever that device is. Why don't you let me buy it? And then we can do this. And they may say, yeah, well, as long as you're buying it, we don't mind. It's their implementation. You have to do what they agree to do. Jose Modesto, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jose.
Hello, Leo.
What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have a question. I have a custom build video gig break here for my video editing, and I just wanted to see how can I get the latest Windows version. It's
the fall creators update. We sometimes call it 1709, and Microsoft said this week it's available to all. For months I've said don't do it if Microsoft doesn't offer it to you, because Microsoft was checking compatibility and so forth, but weirdly this week Microsoft said no, you can. Go ahead. Go get it, even if we don't offer it. So here's what you do. You search for Microsoft. Get it from Microsoft only. Media Creation Tool. You'll create a USB stick that installs the Fall Creators Update. In fact, Microsoft has said, go ahead and do it. Just this week. Your timing is good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me talk to you a little bit about Fracture. I love Fracture. I'm a photographer, too. Let me show you. I mentioned my daughter and my son. I ordered a bunch of prints from Fracture. It's fracture.me. They print your best photographs. And believe me, even if you think, oh, my photographs are good, they will pop. They will shine on Fracture. This is a picture of my son and daughter. I just love this picture. I've given this as gifts to so many people. All the family members, I think, now have this. Fracture.me, they print them on glass in their Gainesville, Florida factory from U.S. source materials, handmade. It's a carbon neutral factory. They call it a fractory. And there's something that happens when you put an image on glass. It just pops. Here's a middle school graduation picture. This is their smallest print, 4.8 inches by 6.4 inches. Just like a little print, but it's glass. You put it on the wall. It's just fantastic. Notice, by the way, this is how the fractures come. Carefully packaged, so they're safe. This is the protective thing. They come already mounted on foam core with a little hook hole in the back, and they come with the hanging stuff. Everything you need, all the hanging hardware, everything. And it's such a great deal. I just love Fracture. You can go all the way up to 21.5 by almost, that's what, 2 feet by 1.5? Let me show you. It's big. This is see, you've got great pictures. I know you do. And they're just languishing on your phone or in the shoebox in your closet, on your hard drive. Look at this. I took this in the Galapagos. That is a sea lion yelling at a flightless cormorant. I love this picture. This is the biggest size they print. That is, you can put that over the mantle. Just gorgeous. Fracture.me. If you use the offer code TechGuy15, you'll get 15% off your first order. Each Fracture comes with a 60-day happiness guarantee. You don't like it? For any reason, send it back. You can get portrait. You can get landscape. They have square format if you want to put your Instagram photos in there. They even have an advanced editor. You notice I like to put borders on them, but there's also you can do it borderless. It's up to you. It's very easy to do. You can upload directly from Facebook or Instagram.
or upload directly from your hard drive. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your first order. They give you a quick one-question survey at the end. Would you do me a favor? Put the Tech Guy in there when they ask, how did you hear about it? The Tech Guy. That way, it helps support the show. Fracture.me. Offer code TechGuy15 for 15% off. And I thank Fracture. We've got fractures all over the house. Sounds wrong when I say that. We have fracture glass portraits. This was Henry's high school graduation. There's his sister just loving him up. I just love that picture. I took that. And black and white really looks nice on glass. But so does color. The colors pop. I see a beautiful color picture. Well, I showed you the big one. This is another one of my favorites. This is the train to Machu Picchu. This is last spring. The color just is so rich and gorgeous. Fracture.me, offer code TechGuy. Look at that. Just really so beautiful. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Plenty good geeking. 8888, ask Leo the number. Let's go to Irvine. Adrian's on the line. Hi, Adrian. Hello, Adrian. Yo, Adrian. You probably heard that a few times. Are you there?
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm good. What's up?
I got a Samsung Galaxy S6 that my mom's managed to lock herself out of.
Oh, no.
And she doesn't have signed up on a Google account or a Samsung account, either one. I'm just wondering if there's a way to get it unlocked.
So when you say she locked herself out of it, she put a passcode on it she doesn't remember?
Yeah, she did a pattern.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. I've done a pattern and then immediately forgotten it. I mean, you don't remember patterns.
That's exactly the case. Woke up the next morning, forgot what it was.
Yeah. Oh, it was this and this. I can't remember what I did. You can back out of it. Is there anything on the phone that she absolutely has no, like, pictures or something that she has no copy of?
Correct.
No. So there's stuff on there she doesn't want to lose. Because, of course, the simplest thing would be to wipe the phone and start over.
Did I do a factory reset?
Yeah, but and it's a little hard to do if you can't get into the phone. You'd have to go through. Let's see. Yeah. So you actually hold the home button and the volume up key, then turn the phone on, and then you hold the volume down key, and then you highlight wipe data factory reset. You press the power key, and then it erases everything. But we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. So I'm going to try to think if there's a way to do this without wiping. I mean, in theory, they don't want to give you a way to do that. That's exactly what a bad guy would do, right? So my suspicion is anything that they said that would get you around that without wiping the data would be, in effect, a back door and not what they'd want. The whole point of a lock screen security is to keep somebody from getting your phone and then seeing your stuff. However, she didn't ever create a Samsung account, huh?
No.
No. It looks like, I'll put a link in the show notes because it's a fairly lengthy process, but it looks like there is a way to do it by connecting it to a PC running Android Device Manager.
Okay.
It looks like you can unlock the phone by connecting it to a PC, running Android Device Manager. I'll put a link to this article anyway in there. It is, you know, I guess you could still say, well, that's a backdoor, but somebody would have to take it to a computer and be sophisticated enough to figure out how to do this. You are. So I'm going to let Adrian do this. This is an article from trendblog.net from last year, and I'll put it at techguylabs.com so that you can...
Sounds good.
Because it's a number of complicated steps. I don't want to walk through it on the radio. All right?
All right, I'll give it a shot.
All right, good luck, Adrian. You're a nice son. This does seem like a flaw, doesn't it? Because people forget passwords. But remember, when you hear this, remember how much we complain as security experts about companies that have
ways around, you know, password, I forgot my password mechanisms. In almost every case, these I forgot my password mechanisms are ways to get around and get your data. You don't want that either. Don't forget your password. Turns out a pattern, which I like, besides not being very memorable, is also not very secure. Might be a better idea to just use digits instead of a pattern, and then she can just write it on a post-it note and put it somewhere. And if she forgets it, at least she can, you know, go home, look in her drawer and find it. I'm sorry that happened to you. That's kind of horrible. Doug from Newton, Kansas. Hi, Doug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Yeah, glad to hear you're feeling better.
No, that was Scott that wasn't feeling well because he went to CES. I didn't go to CES. I'm fine.
Oh, great.
By the way, one of the reasons I didn't go to CES, everybody gets sick at the, you know, you get 180,000 people together shaking hands,
oh, yeah,
and coughing on each other.
Yeah, it's like going to a preschool.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, it is.
I got a computer question.
Sure.
I'm looking to purchase my first all-in-one desktop computer, Windows 10. I'm guessing unless Windows 11 is around.
No, there is no Windows 11. You're safe. In fact, Microsoft says this is the last version. You know, new all-in-one that just came out from HP, and I don't normally recommend HP computers. But the HP has changed their market. They have become really among the best, and they make a couple of all-in-ones that are gorgeous. The HP Envy is interesting because it's one of the big, wide, curved screens. I don't know if you're looking for that.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
Okay.
My needs are simple, but I want good simple.
Yeah. So then look at the new HP Elite One.
Elite One.
It's an all-in-one. Starts at $1,000. It's fairly affordable, and it is gorgeous. Uh-huh. But they have in every respect, I think, done a very nice job. My friend Paul Thurrott, who's my Windows expert, has one, and he's really fond of it.
Yeah, that's the top of my price point. Actually, I did some looking in your archives, and I saw you looking at HP Envy. But it's, you know, $1,300.
Yeah. No, look at the Elite One. They started $1,000, and I think a very nicely equipped $1,000. But HP has other all-in-ones. And people who've listened to me for years will say, what, Leo, you're recommending an HP? Yeah, this is not your father's HP. When they split off the Enterprise, the new HP PC unit, really decided, I think, that they wanted to compete. And they're doing beautiful stuff. I think it's as gorgeous as can be. So the Elite One would be the less expensive, but very nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been to every land. He's Johnny Jet, our traveling guru. He's been everywhere. Although, you took a week off. You were supposed to be in New York City and Korea this week, and you just punted it, huh?
I sure did. It's nice to just stay home and relax and, you know.
You're going to have to change your name to Johnny Stay at Home.
Hey, I've traveled so much that, you know, I think I've owed this.
You earned the jet.
Yeah.
Johnny Jet is really a traveling man. He's one of a new category of blogger, a travel blogger, one of the absolute best and the best known. And his website, johnnyjet.com, great source of information. There's a couple of newsletters. There's all sorts of useful tools for finding better fares. You can follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jet and on Instagram. And he travels like crazy, but nice that you got to be home with your 1-year-old and your wife.
Yes.
And by the way, the weather's been beautiful in Manhattan Beach, so.
Actually, it's chilly today.
Chilly. What is chilly to a Manhattan beacher?
60 degrees during the day.
So. People in the rest of the country are mocking you now, Johnny.
I know, but I grew up in Connecticut, so I know it's like
to
be cool.
Yeah, you're used to it. Yeah. So Johnny joins us to help us travel better through technology, and you got a site for us?
I do, but before I tell you my app and my website, you know, the big travel news yesterday was that Delta is finally cracking down on fake service dogs and animals.
You know, I don't want to say anything because I understand people love their pets.
But I do too.
Haven't
but you know
noticed that there's at least one or two dogs on every flight now?
Well, the problem is it's gone up. They've seen an increase of 84% in since 2016.
Well, sure, people see other people doing it.
Yep.
There was a dog barking. We were going through security. This dog was barking the whole time. I thought, I hope they're not on my flight. I hope they're not on my flight.
Well, I'm happy.
These aren't trained. These are. I understand they're branded companion animals, but they're not trained in the way that a seeing eye dog or some other.
Without a doubt. And I have a bunch of friends and some of your listeners who have seeing eye dogs, and it's a huge problem for them. And we were on a flight a couple weeks ago where a dog almost bit Jack. He was walking up the aisle and just snapped at him.
So what's been happening? People are just buying the vest?
Yep. You go online and you can pay. So that way you can avoid the $150 fee. I think the airlines need to lower that fee, first of all. I think that will definitely help.
I understand, though. If you want to bring a pet with you, you don't want them in the hold. You have to tranquilize them. You know, they're in a cage. I understand that.
I understand that, too. But you can't, you know, pass them off as a service animal because it's doing a disservice to the real animals.
Yeah. So did the rules change that allowed companion animals?
Well, Delta's reinventing it, and
they have to let service animals on.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Service, the legitimate ones. So now they're going to have to show proof of health, vaccinations, also the letter from the doctor. Delta is – you have to do it 48 hours in advance. Delta's setting up a service animal support desk.
A lot of these dogs are emotional support animals, right?
Yeah, but some of them would bring – sugar gliders, snakes, turkeys.
That's my emotional support turkey. it was getting a little bit like a menagerie. It's starting to get like a third world bus ride where you got chickens in the rack. Yeah,
and sometimes the dogs would go to the bathroom on the plane. And service animals are trained not to, and they would have to land, make an emergency landing because it smelled so bad.
Oh dear, oh that's not good.
Anyway, let me get you some good stuff. So here's my website of the day.
Okay.
It's called travelspoon.com.
I love the name. Does it have to do with eating?
Yes, it sure does. Oh. So you're going to love this. I've mentioned similar ones before. So this is where when you're traveling internationally, you can have dinner with a local at their house. They'll cook you a local meal.
Oh, it's not travelspoon.com, or is it spelled differently? Because I see this.
Oh, let me just see.
This is a different domain. I'll do it. You know what? I'll do it with a Google. The Google's always good.
It says traveling.
Traveling. Traveling spoon. Traveling.
Yeah, traveling.
Not travel. Traveling.
I thought I said traveling. Sorry.
You did. Yes, traveling. You did. I heard you wrong. So, all right. So this is a meal or cooking class with the with a local.
With the local. So what the best thing
about
traveling is
I'm going to be in Osaka this spring. Should I? Oh, look.
Yes, they have it. They don't have it everywhere, but they do have it in Japan, and they have it in most major cities, and I'm sure they have it in Osaka.
They do.
Have to
I'm
look
looking
it up.
At it. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Heartwarming Japanese home cooking with a local. Yoshiko will pick you up in her car at the station and drive you 10 minutes to her home. Join her at her dining table for a meal that will definitely include at least one dashi-based dish. I don't know what that is. Such as dashi maki egg roll. Mmm.
Yes.
She'll take you to the market. You'll go shopping. What a great way to get a sense of
a place.
A place. Much better to eat with somebody who lives there than in the hotel with a bunch of other tourists. I love this idea.
Great. And it's actually backed by one of the founders of Expedia. So they got plenty of money. And
We always do a tours by local, which is kind of the same idea. But I like the meal idea. I think that's great.
Speaking of Japan, by the way, I think they still do this. But the tourism board offers a guide for free as long as you email them. I think it's 10 or 2 weeks in advance.
Really?
10 days or 2 weeks in advance. And they will set you up. And I did it once in Osaka.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. The guy comes out. And all you got to do is pay for their transportation, which is like $5 or whatever. And if you go to lunch, you know, pay for their meal. But
and you know, give, this yeah, guy you would, give them a tip at the end, I'm sure.
No, there's no tipping in Japan.
You can't, what? Oh, yes.
There's no tipping in Japan.
This is why you need a local. This is why you need a local. So they could say, stop it. That's insulting. Yes. See, I didn't know that.
You can get them a present. Bring them a present, but do not tip them.
All right. Good to know.
So, all right.
This is traveling.
I'll look for that and I'll mention it next week.
Travelingspoon.com.
And here's my app if we have time.
Yeah.
All right. So, it was actually Apple's 2017 app of the year. It's called Calm. So maybe you heard of it.
C-A-L-M.
Yeah.
Calm.com.
Yes. And it's, I mean, tens of thousands of people rated it in iOS and Android.
It's so great. I've used it. It's so great.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah, I love Calm. Calm's a website. You can put the app on your phone and it's got meditations. It's really nice.
Yeah. One of my things for New Year's is like to slow down and be more calm. And people recommended this. It costs $59 for a year, or you can get a 14-day trial or a 7-day trial. But either way, you know, going to see a shrink is going to cost you a lot more than that. And this is supposed to be spot on.
Here's 21 days of calm for free. So three weeks then. And it's free to sign in. You just make an account. Yeah, I paid for it, though. I love Calm. But I love all of those meditating sites because I always think it's one of those things I do on January 1st. You know, this is the year I'm going to meditate. I'm going to keep a journal. I'm going to exercise every day. I'm going to eat right. None of it. By January 2nd, I'm in front of the TV watching football.
Well, it's funny because I wrote about this the first week of the year. And
I never do any of that. But one of these days I will do these. My daughter loves Headspace, which is another meditation app that's really good. Okay, but Calm.com is really good. Yeah, I love Calm.com.
Okay, good.
Very nice. Very nice. So, Johnny Jett, you make me calm.
And you want some tips? We got time for a tip.
Got a minute for a tip? Sure.
All right. So you know what? This is not tech tip, but if you're in a hotel, I was reading about some housekeepers. They recommend that you lay a towel down on the chair or the seat that you're working in.
Before you sit on it.
Yes.
Don't have talked about this? Say no more. No, we've never talked about it.
Okay.
I think you should lay a towel on everything in the hotel.
Because they say many hotel guests just sit there and work naked and there's a lot of brown spots to clean up.
My God, Johnny, you didn't have to go there. And while you're at it, you might throw out the bedspread or at least put it under the bed or something, too, because who knows what's been going on. JohnnyJett.com. Johnny, you're the best. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram, visit his website, and we'll see you back here next week for more travel tips. You know, I'm sitting on a towel right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You didn't have to go to the brown spot.
Yeah, but you know, you got to keep it real.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip. Put a towel down. That's a good tip. Frankly, I try not to think about this stuff when you go in a hotel because really, if you think about it, it's the whole thing is an unsanit. You're sleeping on a mattress 1,000 people have slept on before you.
Yeah, some people carry a UV light. And I'm like, not going to do that.
You don't want to know.
I'd rather not know.
Let's face it. We're a germaphobe people. It's good for you. Germs are good for you. People used to sleep all together, huddled under a bear skin that was covered with fleas in the middle of a smoke-filled yurt. It's just the way it is. It's good for you.
Yes.
But you don't want to know. And I try not. When I'm lying on this pillow, it's so many other people have laid on before me. I don't want to know. I just don't want to think about it. They don't they don't sanitize this stuff. They wash the sheets, right?
Well, I almost always go into the room and I wipe it down, especially the remote control.
You're a germaphobe.
Yeah, of course.
And the one time I told you don't do that, you got deathly ill. So I'm not going to tell you not to. Yeah. Do some research for me. When hotels, do they clean, do they ever wash the pillow?
The actual pillow?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No.
How are you going to wash a feathered pillow or a foam pillow?
There's this thin cloth over it, but the pillow's filthy.
I think they have two, I would hope.
Two pillows?
Two pillowcases.
Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Mary, Van Nuys, California. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm going to try and unremember most of what just went on.
I know, me too. I'm sorry you had to hear any of that.
You were worth waiting.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate it.
Small sacrifice.
Maybe not so small. She's talking about not the show, folks, but the conversation Johnny and I had during the break. Unfortunately, Mary and all the rest of you were on hold were subject to that. What can I do for you, Mary? Let's change the subject.
Well, I refer to myself as a village idiot, but in truth, I've taken a personal stance. I don't like everything that has been forced down our throats or recordings that tell us, or you can go on our web, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to do it. I want to hear a human being. However, I use my laptop, which my brother gave it to me. I left it in the closet for 2 years, took it out. And I use it only for email.
Mary, I feel like you're regretting it.
Oh, God, I do. I hate every moment.
You don't have to. You know what? You don't have to join us in the 21st century. There's no requirement.
Precisely. That's exactly what it is. I was happy where I was. However, you took away cursive. You took away using our brains. You took away eye contact, blah, blah, blah. So here we are. I put on my big girl underwear, and here I am. I barely use it, and it's not wireless. I have a little box that runs in.
Okay.
However, I got hacked twice within 6 weeks, and it cost me $150 each time.
How did you know you got hacked?
Okay, something froze. I did the thing I always do. I immediately just got hysterical.
Computers freeze all the time. That's not hacked. That's normal.
No, and it wouldn't, and then I got somebody on with me. And then it said, you will have to go to Yahoo. I went to Yahoo page, and of course, that was working. And every single one of them went to an 800 number. I knew something was fishy. I didn't go with it when I was getting close to the pitch.
All right, so I'm going to stop you right here. You should not be running a Windows computer at all. At all.
Okay.
Because you're running a Windows computer right bare to the bone, right on the net. Of course, you're going to have all sorts of problems. And you don't do anything that needs a general purpose computer. You're not designing rocket ships.
No.
You're not editing the next major motion picture. You're not. I mean, email, writing, staying in touch can all be done on a much simpler device that is not hackable. How about that?
I like that very much.
And not expensive.
Okay, what do I get? Tell me.
So there's two ways you could go. You could go with an iPad, which is tablet only.
I have one of those. I don't know what to do with it.
I would stick with that. Now, the problem with the iPad is you're going to have to convert your internet to Wi-Fi because it doesn't have a wired connection.
Not going to happen.
Then let's look at something called a Chromebook. It is basically a very simple, highly secure operating system that'll let you get your email, let you, if you need to surf the web, you can surf the web. Not hackable. You can connect it directly to that line you have. You might have to get a, when you go buy the Chromebook, explain, I need an Ethernet adapter, and they'll give
I know what that is.
Yeah, they'll give you a little adapter you can plug into it. Most laptops these days don't have, in fact, you might already have an Ethernet adapter, because nowadays laptops don't come with Ethernet ports mostly. So there's just a little USB thing you plug into the USB port. But when you buy the Chromebook, you can explain that and say, I need a direct connect to the internet. They'll give you an Ethernet adapter. And you'll be golden, and you won't ever be hacked again. You won't ever have to go to the Geek Squad again. And it'll do everything your current computer does without any of the problems. And it's a couple of $100.
I can do that.
I think much, much better for you and for everybody who doesn't know they need something more powerful.
Two things. I don't want to have something that I have paid for, that I own, that I can't use unless I am at the mercy of someone who will show me what to do. I resent that.
I don't blame you, but I think you can use a browser now, right?
What's a browser? But I don't know.
That's that thing you get on the internet with. You can look at a web page.
Yeah, I can do that.
That's all you get with a Chromebook. So even word processing, anything you want to do, you do all of that in the browser.
I will do that this week.
You can go down to Best Buy, since I know you went to the Geek Squad. You can go down there again and say, show me your Chromebooks. And
I didn't go anywhere. I called.
Oh, they came over.
I'm hysterical. I'm immobile right exactly where I am.
Did they come over or did they do it over the phone?
No, on the phone. I gave it to them and it took them 28 hours the first time.
Oh, dear. Where did you get the number that you called?
Okay. Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
The phone book, yellow pages.
Oh, that's safe.
That's what I did.
That's safe. Good job. Because one of the hacks that people often perpetrate is they put a little pop-up on your screen saying, "This is Windows. We see you have a problem. Call us. We'll fix it." And what they do is they hack you. So I'm glad you went to the phone book, which is not hackable, oddly enough. And and you're safe. So that's good. That's good news.
When I got it back, I'm trying to stay focused. When I got it back, the format was very different. And I was annoyed that I had
a Yeah, get a Chromebook. You'll never have this problem again.
I hate emojis. I really, really do. But the they're obnoxious. But the ones that I had moved. You could throw a kiss or you could write a sentence, let's eat pizza till we barf, because there's somebody eating pizza and then somebody barfing. So it was a quick economy of language.
Yeah.
I have these disgusting ones.
Now they really, actually, things are coming out of their mouths.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. That's called an upgrade. They upgraded you.
No. I used to have them. They took them away.
Wanted them.
Oh, I want it. Well, yeah. When you communicate with a 7-year-old, they think it's
really
funny.
They love it. And
the other ones were loving and kind and sweet.
I can't promise you that the barfing emoji will be back, but the Google Chromebook does allow you to use Google Hangouts to message people, and there are animated emojis in there you can use.
Here's the thing. Until I get it, and I have this gateway with Windows that updates every time every time I brush my teeth, I go back, and it says, don't something. I want my movable emojis back.
I have no idea where they went, Mary. I don't know what they did. I don't know. And I don't even know where you got them in the first place. I'm sorry. That's
when I opened the computer, they were there, but I didn't discover them until recently. And I'm going to stop wasting time on this. But I also discovered what the things on the bottom. I don't need this. I don't want this kind of, I don't need the bells and whistles.
Who gave you this laptop?
Well, my brother lives on the laptop.
He didn't do you any favors, let me tell you.
No, he didn't. My brother, the doctor, has all of his medical programs where he works on people. And
he's got to do it. That's his business. He's got to do it. He's got to use Windows. But you're not doing that.
No.
You have, your needs are actually like 90% of computer users. They're simple, straightforward. Get a Chromebook. Just remember Chromebook.
I wrote it too.
Yeah, go to the Best Buy or whatever store you want to. Most computer stores will sell them. Have them show them to you. Pick one you like. They're very inexpensive, but most importantly, they're very secure. Just remember you'll need that Ethernet, little Ethernet adapter so that you can use it with your hardwired internet.
Listen, I know you can look it up on your computer, but I can explain entropy.
Windows is actually highly subject to entropy. Entropy
I don't need this.
Hits
yes.
Windows I, hard.
My other thing to ask you is...
the center will not hold. Things fall apart.
It is. It's horrible. And so you will understand that at least I am consistent. I have a cell phone. I don't use it. I leave it. And everybody knows it's mine. Why? Because if I take it out, they know the phone wrapped in green bubble wrap is mine.
Mary, on that note, I have to run. But thank you. Get a Chromebook or an iPad. Either one is much safer, much simpler, and will do everything you want to do without all the hassle. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by the good folks at Quicken Loans. You know Quicken Loans, great lender, Dan Gilbert. He's been, he is like this, I think this leader in Detroit. He's completely revitalizing downtown Detroit. I really honor him for that. But he's also a tech guru. He loves technology. And at some point, Quicken Loans realized that the mortgage process wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It was basically something out of the 19th century. You go to a bank Right. When's the last time you went to a bank? But you go to a bank to get the loan. You talk to a the loan guy. He's got a sheaf of papers. It's as if they didn't even invent computers. He probably even has a loan mortgage calculator. Puts in the numbers. Say this is your. This would be your payments. And then it's not even over. After all of this 18th century rigmarole, you got to go back home and find your check stubs and your pace, bank statement, all this crazy stuff. So that's why Quicken Loans created something new. It's called Rocket Mortgage. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. No bank, no mortgage calculator. You don't even have to go to the attic or the cellar and find stuff or call your bank saying, can I have my statements for the last 300 years? You can do it all online. You go to, it's very simple, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They ask you a couple of simple questions, stuff you probably don't even need to look up. You just know off the top of your social security number, birth date, that kind of address. Then, because they have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions, they can get the rest. With your permission, they just get the rest. They crunch the numbers based on income, assets, credit. They will show you the loans you qualify for. And by the way, this took 1 minute. 1 minute. Last time we bought a loan, we bought our house 4 years ago. Lisa and I, it took them almost 3 months. It took forever. 1 minute. Because computers, right? They analyze all the options. They'll show you the loans for which you qualify. You choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. They say, good, you're approved. That's it. You could be literally at an open house, looking at a house, say, we should buy this. Boom. I'm approved. There's even, I love it, a button that says, print the letter, the approval letter to give your realtor because they, maybe they still want paper. I love it. Apply simply, understand fully, then mortgage confidently at Rocket Mortgage. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, rocketmortgage.com/techguy, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/techguy, and we thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage so much for their support of the Tech Guy Show. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about Apple Watches. We talk about why you shouldn't buy a computer. I loved Mary's call last hour because, in a way, something I've been talking about for some time. When people say, I think I should have a computer, this has changed. I think it's changed, actually. Thank goodness. With the advent of smartphones, a lot of people, their computer is their smartphone. And that's for most people, that's probably all they need, right? But occasionally somebody will say, for the kids. We ought to have a computer for the kids. Or, boy, how am I going to keep up with the modern world if I don't have my very own computer? And then the natural thing is, well, what other people use? And you look at the office, they're all using maybe Windows machines, maybe Macs, but most likely Windows machines. You ask your friends, I use it, and they tell you. And then it's just a default. Well, a computer means a PC running Windows, or in some minority of cases, running Mac OS. But in both cases, for many people, that's actually the wrong answer. Those are general purpose operating systems. They were designed, decades ago, and they fundamentally haven't changed, to be able to do anything. Anything a computing device could do, they could do. Even stuff that the inventors hadn't imagined. That's actually the key. That they could do. You just have to write a program to do it. And of necessity, a general purpose computer has to be a few things. It has to be open. It has to be a platform that anybody can design software for. It has to be powerful and complex because in order for anybody to do anything, even something the designers didn't imagine, it has to have a lot of capabilities, a lot of facilities. And of course, that makes it a very powerful, intriguing, exciting device. And a lot of people who listen to this show and a lot of geeks like me love that. They think that's great. We think, love that idea. And the sky's the limit. I can do anything. You know who else loves that idea? Bad guys, hackers. The sky's the limit. I can do anything. I can put a malicious program on there that will attack other systems. I could write a program that will scramble all the data and then pop up a window that says, pay me money if you ever want to see your data again. I can even do that. Yes. Then we take these devices and we connect them to the outside world and say, come on in, the water's fine. Well, of course we have problems. Of course people like Mary get hacked. Mary's doing one thing that I have even today told people not to do, which is she's connecting directly to the internet. She's not behind a router. You know, whatever device is connected to the internet, that's the target for the bad guys. I was just looking at it. I have a network-attached storage device that I use both at home and on the road to back up data, to keep track of stuff. I have my own note-taking application and all of that. So that means it is, perforce, on the internet. It's got holes opened up so people can attack it. And I check the logs every once in a while. Just the other day, somebody from China tried to log into my device. They're hoping they can figure out how to get into it. Now, if you're going to do this, it is really important that you understand what you're doing, that you know how to secure it. You keep up on security and patches and pay attention to all that stuff. All of the things I do, and the device I use helps me do that. But you, if you're Mary, if you're just a normal person, I just want to do email, then suddenly you're crushed by this burden of having to become a computer scientist, a computer expert. She doesn't know she needs a router between her and the outside world. She doesn't need one because she only has one computer, but she does need one because it's security. And that's an additional expense. It's additional complexity. She now has to understand networking. You could see how it gets out of control very quickly. Probably you, if you're listening to this show, you have an interest in this stuff. You probably know a lot about it. You say, well, Leo, come on. This is easy. I've never been bit by a bug. Well, good for you. But obviously, there are a lot of people who have. And obviously, her brother, the doctor, he needs to run Windows because he's got a lot of professional applications he runs. So he is embracing both, you know, the computer and the need to become a security expert and networking expert. Maybe you didn't know this. Maybe you didn't know this. But when you buy a PC, you're saying that it's not written in the fine print, but you might as well be signing your life away. I promise I will become a security expert, a networking expert. I will completely lock my system down. I will protect myself. And it's not just for you. It's for the whole ecosystem, because one infected computer can infect everything. It's really a public health issue. It's more than just you. So you, in effect, are agreeing. When I buy a personal computer, a Windows machine or a Mac, or a Linux machine, I am agreeing to keep track of this stuff, to pay attention. Not just to protect me, but everybody else. But Mary doesn't have to do that. She didn't sign up for that. She just wants to get email. Maybe do some banking, check the internet, buy something online. And here's the good news. The graybeards, the smart computer people at Google and Apple and other companies, understand that computing is not for normal people. And they have put together devices that don't require you to become a security guru, that do the simple things you want to do. You couldn't run a medical practice on it, probably. But if what you want is to get email and surf and all that stuff, you can easily do that. From Google, the Chromebooks. And these are really great devices, very secure, inexpensive, powerful, simple to use, and absolutely locked down. So that's my advice for Mary, to look just like a laptop, just like that Gateway laptop, but without any of the flaws. Many people, and she already has an iPad, many people find the iPad even a better choice. And the iPad would be a good choice for her if she could also go out. She already has the iPad. Maybe just go out and get a Wi-Fi router to connect to her internet, because the iPad doesn't connect directly to a hardwired line. You have to have Wi-Fi. Maybe that actually would be a simpler solution for her. Not simpler, cheaper for sure, maybe easier. She's got to go to the store and buy a router, though, become a networking person. She also has to lock down her router, because the router has to be locked down, too. That's the thing that's sitting on the internet. You got to change the password, make sure you update it regularly, all that stuff. But the iPad itself is secure. You only can get apps from Apple, the Apple Store that Apple's approved. They've gone through, for the most part, that works pretty well. Occasionally stuff leaks through, for the most part, that works quite well. You can do all the things, most basic computing things. Truthfully, your smartphone is probably all you need for most people. But you want a bigger screen, get an iPad, a bigger screen still, and a keyboard, get a Chromebook. I would say almost all the people who are today buying general purpose operating systems and computers would do better for themselves and for the ecosystem if they just buy either an iPad or a Chromebook. Period. Now, the problem when I say this, geeks go, oh, no, she can do it. I know you can do it. She needs a computer. She just needs a better computer. Well, good. Then you're volunteering to go over and make sure Mary's secure. Visit her once a week. Make sure she's secure and all that stuff. You're saying you'll do that, right? No, you don't. I'll do you a favor. Mary, get a Chromebook. Okay, she'll be much happier. And this is the beauty of it. They're less expensive than a general-purpose computer for the most part. And they get the job done. They're quite nice. Actually, I think, you know, my daughter, who's a college student, she uses a Chromebook. She's very happy with it. My son has a MacBook, but he's a photographer and a videographer, and he wants to do video editing, photography. If I could get him, you know, to do all that stuff on a Chromebook, I'd probably be happier. I wouldn't have to worry about that, but he needs a full service computer. Okay, fine. If you know you need it, get it. But if you don't know, don't. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to go to the phones, take more of your calls right after this. I think the reason I don't recommend Android that much is because I don't think that's very secure. Chromebook's much more secure than Android. And actually, now Chromebooks will run Android apps, so you're probably all right. I think an iPad is a better choice than an Android tablet, far better choice. And a Chromebook, maybe if you need a keyboard and a bigger screen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Joy on the line from Santa Cruz. Hi, Joy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a little cold today, but...
This is great. You know. We had Mary on, Merry, and now we have Joy on. A happy show.
Okay, that's great. I have a question, and it's more of a... it's kind of a weird one. I signed up for a membership for this recipe company. You know, they're called Chef Steps.
Okay, yep. I'm familiar with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've been using their sous vide. But I can log in on my computer. But when I go up to my other computer or my husband's computer, even though I'm using the same email and password, I can't get into it.
What does it say? This is wrong?
Yeah.
What?
Isn't that weird? I mean, does that mean I can't?
Can you log in on any other computer, or is it just your husband's computer, or can you log in only on your computer? You understand the difference? Is it only work with your computer, or does it only not work with your husband's computer?
That I don't know, because we don't have a...
Try one more. Go to the library. So the reason I ask that is it would help me understand what's going wrong.
Well, is it the DNS?
No, because you're in the same house, right?
Right.
So you're
on the same router.
You're on the same router, so it's unlikely that you have anything different, including the IP address. So it's not like they're saying, "Oh, this is some stranger." It's the same. As far as they're concerned, it's you, because it's the same internet address. So that's puzzling to me.
It's puzzling to me too.
And how do you enter the password? Are you typing it?
Yeah.
And you're typing it. Don't tell me the password, obviously, but when you type it, are there odd characters in it or anything? Is it just letters, numbers, and punctuation?
It's basically that, one I use consistently.
Now, it's only showing dots when you type it.
Yeah.
So the one...
I can't really see what it...
You can't see. So the one thing I would try, it's possible, for instance... that your husband has NumLock or Caps Lock on or something like that. So one thing I would try is go to your husband's computer and don't type it in the field. Type it on a word processor or a notepad or whatever on the computer. So you make sure it's exactly right, that you're getting what you thought you were getting.
Okay.
And then paste it into the field.
Uh-huh.
I bet you that'll work.
That might very well make a difference. Okay.
I'll... Yeah, just to make sure, because so the process of solving something like this is a process really of, it's like Sherlock Holmes, narrowing it down.
Yeah, because it should work on all of our, on it any computer I log
should.
Into.
It absolutely should. So you're right in thinking it's seeing something different. I would go right to the most obvious, which is it's seeing a different email address or password. So make sure your husband's computer is typing in what you think it's typing in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Paste it into a clear text field and then see what you get.
Okay, one other thing I just had to mention.
Yes.
The Delta thing with their new rules
yeah,
and stuff?
Yeah.
Do you know what initiated that?
No, this is the companion. They're going to be more strict about companion animals. Yes.
Right. People were bringing turkeys.
Yes.
And snakes.
Crazy.
And opossums.
That is not a companion animal.
No.
That is not. It used to be, you had to have it actually trained and you had to have the paperwork and all of that stuff. And what happened is that people wanted emotional support animals. But some people ruined it for the rest of us by, instead of just doing that, they just wanted to save money on the fee. And so they said, well, no, this is a companion animal, my companion snake.
Well, what kind of emotional support does a turkey I used to raise chickens,
I know, they don't help. They make you nervous.
Yeah.
They're nervous animals. This is the world we're in right now where you can't question anybody's...
sanity?
Belief. Like, no, you can't question this. A turkey makes me feel better. It's not for you to question. I'm glad Delta's doing this. I hope other airlines follow suit. It's getting crazy on a plane these days.
Yeah, well, you don't know if people have allergies to the animals.
That's not right. Come on, people. Be reasonable. Come on. Yeah. Animals are barking, pooping, biting. They're not... I love dogs. I understand a dog lover wants to bring their dog on the plane, but there are other people on there, too. Keep your shoes on while you're at it. That's another
thing. Right, and just get somebody to take care of your dog or
help.
Yeah,
come on. It's not good for the dog either.
No, it isn't.
No.
They can get all kinds of weird things like kennel cough and all this other stuff.
Yeah. So, by the way, there is Mars Room in our chat room had a thought. He says turkeys actually can help you sleep, but you have to eat them first. Nice to talk to you, Joy.
All right. Thank
Take
you very
care.
Much.
I'll My pleasure. That. Yeah, give it a try. Otherwise, I'm baffled. I'm baffled. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's go to Nam in Lake Forest, California. Hi, Nam.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Well, being a dad, I'm trying to save money. Hand me down to my daughter a iPhone 6S, and her charging port didn't work. So, I bought the parts and I put it in, and everything works, but now her ID touch doesn't work.
Uh-huh. And that's Apple. Because they say as soon as you have a third party modify an iPhone, we can't be sure that it's not been hacked. And we're going to disable the fingerprint reader. So your only choice is to go to Apple now, any Apple store, and tell them what you did. And they can restore that capability. But they're worried about your security. And that's why they do this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like this. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. He's always finding good new stuff. I love it. Is this new or old? No Diggity by Blackstreet. That's what my phone says. Is that right? The phone got it. No Diggity. Michael Cozio, our musical director. Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Thank you both for making our show today. Back to the phones we go. And Bud's on the line from Lolo, Montana. Hello, Bud.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Welcome. I'm great. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Leo, I have a hearing problem, and I'm speaking to you right now by using a set of earbuds on my iPhone 6.
Okay.
But my question is, can you recommend a hearing amplifier I can buy over the counter?
Yeah, so you've probably, and I wear hearing aids from Starkey, and you probably looked at those. If you go to an audiologist and get tested and then get a quote, you may pass out. Because hearing aids, my pair costs $6,000.
Yes.
That's outrageous. That's outrageous. So here's the good, in my opinion, and this is opinion, although I think it's backed up by recent events. That's all about to change because a number of companies are starting to design devices that do what you kind of want to do. You remember, you might remember Grandpa used to have a thing in his pocket, right?
Yes.
Went to a wire in his ear. It looked like a transistor radio, but it was a little microphone. He'd turn it up and down. And, of course, you'd also hear squealing feedback. And Grandpa sometimes would go, ow! But that's what you're talking about, isn't it? A microphone that would then go into your ears, right?
Yes.
I'm sure there are ways to do that. I don't know of them. And there are other issues associated with it. Number one, of course, is feedback. What's interesting about modern hearing aids, one of the reasons they do cost a lot is they're very sophisticated computer-powered devices now. Tiny, and I think we're going to see more and more of this, but among other things, I never get feedback because they're smart enough to cancel out incoming noise or the noise of my voice. So they've really improved dramatically. But I was a little disappointed when I got them because they're still tuned to do one thing only, and that's to improve speech recognition. The big problem people have with hearing loss, and I have hearing loss as well from many years as a DJ, is you can't understand what people are saying, right? Your family and friends say, Dad, stop saying what? I remember my dad, who has also severe hearing loss, at one point started saying, you just mumble all the time. And I knew I wasn't mumbling, but I didn't want to say, Dad, it's you, you're deaf. He did eventually get hearing aids, and anybody who's had a family member who can't hear very well, you know it's such a blessing when they get hearing aids. But they are tuned for voice recognition only. And what that means is music doesn't sound better. In fact, it doesn't help music at all. And it has kind of a negative. You have to get used to it because you hear stuff in that very small mid-range of sounds extra loud. Like all of a sudden I'm hearing my shoes on the carpet because that frequency was right in the voice frequency and that was being amplified more than even normal. And so those are things that when you first get hearing aids, the audiologist will actually work with you to get used to all of that. You also hear a little bit of your voice coming back. I think that very soon now, we're going to start seeing, you know, what's already happening with Apple, with their AirPods. We're seeing this year is going to be the year of wireless headphones. I have a pair of Jabra headphones I love. That seal the ear pretty tightly, very good sound reproduction. Because they're in your ear, they have a heart rate monitor. They monitor oxygen in your blood so they can do a VO2 max testing. They're really cool. There are apps on smartphones that will take the smartphone microphone and pipe it into those earbuds, exactly what you're talking about. So I'm going to have to look and see because I don't know what the brands are. But just understand there are going to be some issues. You're going to want something in your ear that seals it pretty well, so that it doesn't feed back the sound. You'll have to put the phone somewhere that's not rustly, because if it's in a pocket, you're going to hear a lot of you'll be amazed how much rustling you'll hear from your clothing and, you know, fabric around it. But there certainly are apps to do that on Android. I'm going to check to see if there are any on iOS. You'll have to stay tuned because I have to do a little research because I don't know off the top of my head. I just don't know if these are the ultimate solution. They'll give you a temporary solution, but then keep your eye peeled because there are a number of up and coming companies like Bragi, Bragi, who I believe, and Apple, frankly, Google maybe too. They have their own wireless earbuds who are about to revolutionize this. And the companies, the high tech hearing aid companies like Starkey, which is in the United States, Resound with a Z, they're going to either follow suit and make less expensive appliances that work in a broader way and that also work with voice assistants. That's another thing you can do with some of these. I can tap my AirPods and talk to Siri. These things, we call them hearables. And in my opinion, we're about to enter a revolution in hearables. It's not there yet for you. So let me do some research. I'll answer your question on our show notes at techguylabs.com or maybe in the next break. I just have to do a little research to figure out what's out there. But basically, you'll need a pair of wireless, I guess you could use wired earbuds. They should seal pretty well in the ear. So they're pretty tight in the ear. And then an app that you run on the phone, the other thing that's going to do is kill the battery on the phone. So you're going to only get a few hours battery life. But it will use the phone's microphone and will just pump it up into your ear. There's other things you have to get used to. For instance, you're going to hear your voice two ways. And this the same thing happens with hearing aids. You'll hear your voice in your head, but you'll also hear it a millisecond later coming through the headphones. So it's almost an echoey sound with your voice. And none of these apps fix that. Hearing aids are a little more sophisticated. They can reduce, they can do echo cancellation. They can reduce that effect. But you'll get, I call it a chorusing effect because it sounds like there's two of you. You're not singing, but almost like singing together. And that's one of the sound, side effects you're going to get from things like this. They don't cancel the voice out. So you're going to be getting it through your microphone, but also in your head. And that's a little hard to get used to. They work, though. They do the job. I'll find some for you. All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up in just a little bit, Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. We call him our Gizwiz. He's back from CES. I'm sure he's going to have some crazy gadget. You know, I'm getting, in the next couple of days, finally my Indiegogo, my LED eyelash. Oh, I am going to be so pretty. Can't believe I bought those. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is just for you. Now, come on, admit it. This makes you want to put on a white suit. Bob your head. Dance.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have time, but it's over there on a hanger.
You have one, I'm sure. That's Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer and a disco-crazed gizwiz. We call him the gizwiz because he's a gizmo wizard. Gizwiz.biz is his website. Hi, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
In Gizneyland?
Yeah. So I know, since I watched Screensavers last week,
yes,
that Padre told you about a new gadget called Rove from VIA, part of the new Anchor company.
I ordered one
already. Oh, did you order it? Okay.
It comes in a month, though. Do you have one already?
I do have one.
But you don't have a car.
But I don't have a car.
He lives in New York. He's never owned a car. Have you ever owned a car?
I have never, ever owned a car.
Wow. But you don't need one in New York.
No. But so, I'm pulling together a spot for ABC. So
you
got to
rent a car so you can try this thing.
I can try. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what is
but
it?
But I found another gadget that has the female voice in it from Amazon. I find if you say Alex A, the thing doesn't respond. Okay. I tried everything and I keep going. Alex A, and it doesn't respond.
You could just call it Amazon's Echo technology or something.
Okay. Amazon. Echo. Okay. Another gadget that has it. And at first I thought, what? That's weird. And then when I went to the exhibit, this is at CES, and the woman was talking, I thought, you know, this is not a bad idea. So first alert.
Let me just explain because we did what the Rove is, the Rove Viva.
Oh, yes.
It goes in your cigarette or accessory port, your cigarette lighter in your car. And it adds Amazon's Echo to your car, so you can talk to your car. So what is what
along
is
with two great charging ports?
Yeah, and you get two ports. Yeah. So what does this do?
All right. So First Alert has a system of smoke CO detectors called Safe and Sound, and they use Wi-Fi so that if there's an emergency in one room, it tells you what the emergency is and what room it's in, but it notifies all the other alarms in your house. This if they're one link alarms. And so this woman said, we decided since you already might have these in every room, why not put in Amazon's voice?
Oh,
so that you can
might
play
as well.
Yeah, you can play. You can play music in every room
since you're putting smoke detectors in every room already.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And then you sit, no matter what room you're in, you don't have to run back to where your Echo is. You can just ask in any room the questions that you need.
I love it.
Every room can play their own music.
I love it.
And since these units are hardwired, it's on all the time. So I think it's a very good idea. And now this is not coming out. I think the Amazon version is coming out in the next 2 months. And then about 6 months down the road, there will be Google Voice, if that's the option.
Oh, they're hedging their bets, aren't they?
They're hedging
their bets. Just in case.
Just in case.
Yeah.
And then if you don't want any of that, they make a system without either one of those, and that's about $150. The all-in-one system is $250.
Nice.
And they've put in a much more...
We're going to have echo in everything, aren't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you want to see more information about this, Dick has a website I should point you to, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz.
Yes, sir.
It's kind of nice because biz rhymes. Did you know? Biz what rhymes with gizwiz?
You know, wait a minute. Really I was so clever.
Yeah, if you go and click the link, the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, you'll find information about this there. But you can also, while you're there, click the link that says, "What the heck is it? What is it?" And play for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Just identify a close-up picture of a gadget. Don't worry too much about what it really is, because there's more Mad autographs, Mads, for the wrong answer than there are for the right answer.
Yeah, that's the way life should be.
All decisions of the judges are final. Gizwiz.biz, while you're there, check out his great podcast. I know you just put out the first one with Chad from CES. You've got another one coming, right?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Yes, we
Gizwiz. Do. Gizwiz.tv for his Gizwiz podcast. If you like junky gadgets, you'll love the Gizwiz. Is that your
there
slogan?
There you go.
I think it is.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care. I'll see you next week.
I think I got time for one more. Let's say hi to Nikki in Burbank. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Leo.
I am thrilled to get you on. What can I do for you today?
Well, I called a year ago, and you recommended the Chromebook.
I hope it's working out for you.
Yes and no. I was the naughty little devil that got fed up with the fries salesman and screenshotted the screen and left the photo open so none of the nothing would work.
So it looked like icons, but it wasn't. It was just a picture of icons.
Exactly.
Oh, you are bad.
So I went ahead and got the Chromebook, and it's wonderful. I mean, it's idiot-proof. It's none of the...
No security. It's reliable. But I hear a butt coming. What's the problem?
Yeah. So the main account that it's logged into to even open the machine at all, it's crashing now. As soon as it logs me in, it crashes and boots me back out.
Oh.
And it does that again and again and again.
This is why you're going to be glad you got a PowerBook. Because if this were a Windows machine, I'd be going through all sorts of stuff for you. But as you may know, Chromebooks have something called PowerWash.
Exactly.
So you don't have to log in to do PowerWash. It's in the settings, but you can actually do it before you log in. Have you tried this yet?
I have not, because all my files are saved within that account. I'm using a different Gmail account.
Doesn't matter. They're not saved on the computer. They're saved on the cloud. So you can log in with any account you want. And your data will all be safe. Yeah, because it's very hard to do this on a Chromebook. They don't come with much storage because the point is not
they're on the hard drive, which is only 16 gigs. So
how do you know they're on the hard drive?
Because that's where I saved them to.
Okay. You weren't using Google Drive or anything like that?
No.
Okay, so...
That only gives me 1 gig, so I only backed up a very...
No, it gives you a terabyte, not a gig. It gives you 1,000 gigs. And you get 150 gigs just for getting a Chromebook. So in any event, one gig, you're right, wouldn't be nearly enough. But that's why they give you 100 gigs or 150 gigs when you buy a Chromebook.
But it's got to be my hard drive they're on, because it's down to 1.1 gig and I was starting to export them.
And that's probably why it's crashing. That's a little bit more tricksy, because they don't, you know, the power wash will wipe it all out.
Right, exactly. That's why I haven't done it.
Yeah. And the power wash you could do from the home screen very easily, but let's not do that. Have you tried other Google accounts to log in?
Yeah, I'm in one right now.
I see. So it's just that one. Yeah, you won't be able to see the stuff. So you won't be able to see the stuff unless you log into the account that created it. And you say it crashes when you do that.
Yep. It kicks me. It just goes to a black screen and kicks me back out, and then it'll reboot and I log in again.
Hang on, because I'm out of time, but I want to see if I can help you. So hang on the line and I'll help you off the air. And maybe the chat room has some suggestions. There must be a recovery solution here. We'll look into it. Hey, thanks for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.